Welcome to the Omfit Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Omfit Podcast. My name is Pierre Ortlieb. I'm the head of policy analysis at Omfit. Today I'm speaking to Seok-Jun Yang, who is the Director General of the Reserves Management Group at the Bank of Korea. We've got a great conversation coming for you on the Bank of Korea's reserve response to the COVID shock, the future of foreign exchange reserves, including their asset and currency allocations, and potential changes to the global financial safety net. So it's a really interesting conversation. Thank you to Mr. Yang for joining us, and I hope you enjoy it. Okay, Mr. Yang, thank you for joining us. I want to start off with a broad question to set the scene a little bit. Maybe you can give us a sense of how your reserves management team reacted to the COVID-19 shock in March. What was your what was the response that you had to the events that were unfolding, the market turmoil? So maybe you can give us a sense of that, and we'll start with that.
For sure. Global financial market was extremely volatile in March last year, like you said. Then the Korean financial market also suffered from the same thing. Korean market was no exception. The reason why I mentioned Korean financial market is that it sometimes affects the foreign exchange reserve management. I mean, depending on how serious the market situation is, we should focus on securing liquidity to timely respond to local FX market demands. Looking back at the time, you know, there was a surge in global demands to liquidate assets for making cash, which caused a sharp decline in the market liquidity. Even high liquid government bonds as well as corporate bonds showed a significant increase in transaction cost. When we experienced similar situation in the past, we have realized as a reserve manager, the most important thing, I think, is to maintain the assets efficiently enough to secure liquidity with minimal transaction cost. This is why we emphasize safety and liquidity as primary objectives. You can say that enhancing profitability is also important, but I think it should be pursued in a proper range after safety and liquidity are secured. In this regard, I can say the short-term liquidity trench was very useful tool at the time. Basically, it has been made to make cash flows processing through this separately from the investment trench. Actually, thanks to this function of the liquidity trench, the investment trench can be managed stably without any big change. Moving on to operational reaction, we converted some of the operation system into emergency framework to ensure business continuity. For example, Night Desk was operated in the head office as a way to supplement the New York and London trading desk when the cities were locked down. And in preparation of emergencies, the back office was reinforced, like the number of settlement and payment steps were increased, and the IT system was secured to maintain normal operation. Last thing I want to say, that we could return the system to normal earlier than expected, thanks to early market recovery, and we could implement it the investment plans as made before the pandemic. So we increased the proportion of stocks slightly in April, which is very good timing. So this contributed to good performance last year. Pierre?
Yeah, that's very interesting. I like that you mentioned your equity allocation in the investment tranche at the end. Maybe we can touch on that a little bit. So you guys do have quite a sizable equity allocation in your reserves. When was it decided to incorporate this? And Maybe you can give us a bit more detail on how exactly the equities performed during the COVID shock, whether they kind of passed the test, so to speak. So maybe you can give us a little bit more color on that.
Bank of Korea started investing in equities in 2007. Since then, equity allocation has increased in line with the increase of the reserve. As for the composition, the equity portfolio consists mainly of developed market stocks with a small proportion of Chinese and emerging market stocks. Considering the principle of safety in foreign exchange reserve management, and from the viewpoint of conservative central bank, actually, it is not easy to increase the equity investment with a considerable rate. But we know that the equity investment needs to be maintained at an appropriate weight to make expected return higher and sharper risk lower due to the diversification effect. Current equity allocation is just about 10% of the total assets, but we are reviewing the optimal weight of equity investment and reflecting in the annual planning, depending on market condition. Even during the last year, right after we suffered from the extreme volatility in the global stock market, we increased the equity allocation slightly according to the annual investment plan, which was made before pandemic. Fortunately, global stock market started to rebound after we implemented it, and so this contributed to good performance last year, as I mentioned. Finally, I have invest over $1 billion in ESG-related stocks since 2019, and we will plan to gradually expand the volume. We are comprehensively considering the growing trend of global ESG investing, strengthening public accountability of the foreign exchange reserve and overall investment performance. Pierre?
Yeah, that's interesting about the ESG stocks. I think that puts you very much that puts you down as a leader in that space. I think very few central banks are doing that kind of thing. Maybe we can just take a step back, I think. One thing that I wanted to touch on that you mentioned earlier when we were talking about your response to the COVID shock. I'm curious, so obviously in March and April, the Fed and the ECB, but especially the Fed, rolled out a number of different policy measures, including an FX swap line with you guys at the Bank of Korea, in addition to a huge QE program across different asset classes. So I'm curious if you can give me a sense of how you and your team thought about and reacted to the global policy response, and especially the Fed's suite of measures. I think that would be great.
Okay, as you know very well, in response to COVID-19 pandemic, the major central banks' accommodative monetary policies and government's active fiscal policies have been carried out to unprecedented levels. Particularly in U.S., cooperation between monetary and fiscal policies have been outstanding, like through Federal Reserve's massive quantitative easing, reacting to Treasury's huge bond issuance. Actually, due to this rapid response, the V-shaped recovery was possible in the financial market. Together with this, from the viewpoint of local FX market in Korea, as a factor to make this local FX market stabilized, we cannot exclude the current swap agreement with U.S. Federal Reserve. Actually, because it is the best global financial safety net as a second line of defense added to foreign exchange reserves. if these stability measures were not taken quickly, reserve management would have much difficulties of returning to normal. In this context, we can say the international policy response since the pandemic have been very effective. However, now is the time we have to closely monitor when U.S. monetary policy will normalize, paying attention to spread of virus variants, and worrying about the size of expanded debt of each country.
That's interesting. You've given us a sense of how you think about some of the different elements of what you could call the global financial safety net. So the foreign exchange reserves, as you said, are the kind of the first line of defense, and then the swap lines are a second layer. Can you maybe share your thinking on how you think the global financial safety net could be improved or strengthened? I mean, obviously, the swap lines worked quite well. But it's never ideal, I think you would agree, to rely on, you know, the impromptu action of the Fed. So what could be improved in your view about the global financial safety net to make the global financial system more resilient in the future?
It's a very good question, but difficult to answer. Actually, from past experiences, we find that the individual countries' foreign exchange liquidity problems caused by rapid capital outflows were partly due to country-specific problems, but mostly due to external factors like sudden changes in international capital flows. This means individual countries' responses to crisis seems quite limited in overcoming the difficulties. You know, obviously, a large quantity of foreign exchange reserves play a very critical role of financial safety net for the individual country. So this is why many emerging countries, including Korea, they put a lot of efforts to accumulate reserves to this end. However, Korea couldn't be protected even with the sixth largest foreign exchange reserve in the world from the impact of 2008 financial crisis. At the time, the most effective measure was the currency swap agreement with the U.S. Federal Reserve. This has highlighted the need for global financial safety net as a second line of defense in addition to foreign exchange reserves. Among the several types of global safety net, as you know, the central bank's currency swap with key currency countries like United States are the most effective, especially for non-key currency countries. Together with this, the FEMA repo facilities, then U.S. Federal Reserve established, is expected to be helpful because it is useful for cash funding instrument, actually for the countries holding U.S. treasuries, but failing to make an agreement currency swap with U.S. Federal Reserve. Like this, the cooperative efforts between central banks are the most important, among others, in order to strengthen global safety net. If a country secure enough foreign exchange reserve, as well as participate a global financial safety net, while maintaining good economic fundamentals, it would be the best crisis defense system. Pierre?
Yeah. Yeah, that's very helpful. And I'm curious. I mean, we're talking about the global elements. But obviously you in Korea, you have the Korea Investment Corporation, which is a fairly large sovereign wealth fund. And I'm curious, Maybe you can give us a bit of a sense of how you worked with them, whether there was any kind of interaction during the COVID-19 shock. What's your relationship and how has that proved fruitful during challenging and volatile times?
Bank of Korea has outsourced the external managers since more than 20 years ago. And Korea Investment Corporation is one of them. Like other external managers, KIC is given by the Bank of Korea, benchmarks and guidelines of the bond and stock investment within the foreign exchange reserve investment scope. As you mentioned, KIC is Korean sovereign wealth fund, which was established in 2005. Under a separate law, and they are insured under that law, the autonomy of asset management. But we have to know that basically KIC aims to the increased profitability of entrusted assets, while the Bank of Korea places a priority on safety and liquidity over profitability in the foreign exchange reserve management. In this regard, the entrusted assets to KIC are mainly those with higher risk, higher return than those managed internally in the bank, in the BOK. Stocks and lower rated credit bonds are the examples. Under the law, Bank of Korea has an obligation and responsibility to check the performance and risk management status by receiving operational reports and conduct portfolio review periodically. In addition, just for your reference, the Bank of Korea governor and his delegate is supposed to participate as a member of the steering committee to deliberate on mutual long-term investment policies, appointment and dismissal of executive members, and approval of budget and the settlement of the account, and evaluation of management performance, etc.
So there's almost a principal agent relationship between the bank and KIC. Just two more questions. The first one, I think, you mentioned that you treat KIC as one external manager as part of your roster of external managers. And obviously you guys have been doing this for 20 years or even longer. I mean, so I'm curious, if you can share maybe generally your thoughts on how you use external managers, how your relationship with external managers has developed over the past 10 years, and specifically because of the COVID shock. I think it would be really interesting to hear how those relationships have changed and the challenges have evolved a little bit. So including KIC, kind of the broader universe of external asset managers and how those, you know, how would those relationships have changed?
Currently, more than 20% of total assets are externally managed. The assets have been increased and diversified with the investment scope expanded to higher return and higher risk as foreign exchange reserve increased. Through this process, you know, we have been able to utilize infrastructure like human resources and systems, which we don't have. In this regard, the externally managed assets have mainly higher return than internally managed assets, as I mentioned. Currently, all equities are managed by external managers. In case of bonds, the scope is different between external and internal management. in terms of product as well as benchmarks and guidelines. Looking back at the experience of using external managers over 20 years, I can say several things about how it has been. First, when you started external management in 1990s, Bank of Korea dispatched our staff for on-the-job training for the purpose of acquiring advanced management techniques. Second, some products initially relied on external management, after some time have been transferred to internal management. The corporate bonds, asset-backed bonds, and emerging market bonds are examples. Very importantly, I can say that the external managers have served as a test bed before we introduced some products to the internal management. Lastly, as time passed, remarkably, the local asset management companies have grown rapidly enough to make themselves second to global companies as an asset manager. Therefore, there's no reason that the Bank of Korea is hesitant to increase the allocation to these local companies.
Good, that's great, thank you. I think you've given us a really nice sense of the evolution of some of these relationships. Maybe just on a final note, the question that I think is on a lot of people's minds is how much more can foreign exchange reserves grow? Obviously, you guys have quite a sizable stock of reserves. I think you said number 6 in the world. So I guess the last question that I want to put to you is do you still see a case for reserves accumulation? Why, if so, you know, really, really why when, the stocks are already so large and the global financial safety net is evolving. So maybe we can close on that note.
Actually, by statistics, since 2000, Korea foreign exchange reserve have increased by over 10% annually on average, except for 2008. However, very carefully, I guess Korea foreign exchange reserve are more likely to increase gradually rather than decrease in the future. This is mainly based on the expectation that the current account surplus is likely to continue due to possible strong exports, and profits from reserve management are expected to remain stable. However, the pace of increase in foreign exchange reserve is expected to slow significantly in the future. I think this is because the current account surplus is likely to slow and capital outflow by residents outbound investment continues to increase gradually. Furthermore, if the low interest rate environment continues globally, maybe it will be difficult for the bond-based reserve management like us to increase its earnings significantly. Just for your reference, just by calculation, it took more than 3 years for foreign exchange reserve to grow from $100 billion to $200 billion. While it took more than 7 years to reach $400 billion from $300 billion. Perhaps maybe it will take a considerable amount of time to increase $500 billion from current level.
The challenge of the low interest rate environment, I suppose. I know I said that was the last question, but actually just one final thing that I wanted to get your thoughts on. Obviously the renminbi and its role as a future reserve currency is kind of on everyone's mind. How do you guys at the Bank of Korea evaluate the future role of the Chinese currency? What are your thoughts on that? Just on a quick final note.
According to IMF core statistics, the renminbi accounts for nearly 2% of the world's foreign exchange reserves. This means, I think, quite a few central banks are positively evaluating the outlook for renminbi. Bank of Korea has diversified the investment into renminbi-denominated assets since 2012. We have comprehensively taken into account the potential growth of Chinese financial market, the growth in the internationalization of the renminbi, and increased links between Korea and China. Actually, the judgment about renminbi investment is still valid, even though it is hard to predict how the international monetary order changes in the future. I think Chinese bond yield is attractive enough, especially in this low interest rate era. And so the renminbi is an attractive investment vehicle. Bank of Korea will monitor the development of Chinese financial market and the renminbi exchange rate movement and decide whether to expand our investment further. Pierre?
Great, thank you very much. I think that was a fascinating conversation, and you've given us a really great set of insights onto how you guys manage your reserves and what's likely to change in the future. So thank you to Mr. Yang for joining us today. It was great speaking to him about the Bank of Korea's foreign exchange reserves management. We had a great exchange on some of the future changes that we might expect in the international monetary system and in the way foreign exchange reserves are managed. So thank you, Mr. Yang, for joining us, and thank you for listening. You can find our podcast on iTunes and Spotify, and like and subscribe if you enjoy our podcast. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the OMFIF podcast.